What's up, everybody? You know what happens on Mondays, then now you get something from the archives. Enjoy this week's inspiring motivational interview, and we will catch you later on in the week as we start to share with you some of the best tools and tactics, everything having to do with sales. Let's go.
Take this opportunity to take a few minutes to tell you about our next presenter. But first, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everybody for putting this together, EO San Diego. Let's give a round of applause. This year marks my fourth consecutive Alchemy. And I love this event more than anything because it's just given me a chance to do some of the things that I could have never imagined before joining EO. For instance, last year, Arizona, where's Arizona at? Yeah. I had the opportunity to expand my mind and write rhymes with the greatest poet of all time, in Q. Yeah, that was amazing. And then we had, Denver? Denver here? Yeah. Anybody? I actually had the chance to race Lance Armstrong, who in my opinion is still one of the greatest endurance athletes of all time. But I didn't win the race or anything, but that's because he cheated, you know. We're gonna say. low blow. But seriously, the thing I love about this event more than anything is just hearing all these incredible stories of success and triumph. You know, the kind of stories that they make movies about. I got to hear from the actual people that were behind the movie Pursuit of Happiness, 127 hours, and $1 million arm. But this year, the speaker that I'm most excited to hear from is from someone you probably never heard of. In fact, I insisted on doing this introduction because she's changed my life more than anybody I've ever known. I met Kaylin when she first moved here about 3 years ago at a bar in Pacific Beach. At the time, I was struggling to hire salespeople, and she was in the recruiting business. So she helped coach me. It was her advice that ultimately led me to scale my company to be on the Inc. 5000 and increase revenues by 115%. I'd always offer to buy her drinks and take her to dinner to show my appreciation. Yeah, you know. Well, what are you trying to say here? It's about recruiting, I swear. But as I got to know her, I had a feeling that something was a little bit off about this woman. You see, she's always, if anybody knows her, everybody knows that she's so happy and, you know, just full of positive energy. It's like she just conquered the world. And she, on top of this, she's also smart, charming, and not bad looking. But the way that she lived her life kind of told a different story. She always drove an older car, and she lived in an apartment that she found on Craigslist with just three random people. As my company started to scale, I'd always push her to scale her business as well. But she always told me that she just wanted to focus on working out and staying active and really wasn't concerned about her career at the time. I really didn't understand how she could be so happy and so confident without showing any of the signs of what I would consider success. She told me that for the time being, she really didn't care about getting a new car or her own place. And she wasn't caring about the things that I was so desperately chasing. She just wanted to enjoy herself. She did some volunteer work. And she wanted to work on the things that she was just passionate about, even if it meant she was only scraping by. Have you ever really liked someone, so you kind of ignore all the signs that they might be a little bit crazy or something's a little bit off? I had a feeling that this might be one of those situations. So I decided to Google her. I started getting really nervous just a few keystrokes in, because as I started typing in her name, Google filled in the rest. So I knew there'd be an interesting story. And if I'm gonna be honest with you, what I read about her terrified me. But not because she's crazy. As it turns out, this woman is the most incredible person I have ever met. After reading about her, I told her how amazing I thought she was and how her story affected me. I told her if she'd just share her story with the world, if she would do that, I promised I'd take care of the rest. Now, there's no movie about her yet, but since we started Landmark Makers, she's written a best-selling book, has been featured on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, Forbes, PBS, NPR, and countless others. Now, here to tell her story, Miss Kaylin Elsberry.
I don't even know that guy. I still remember the sound of the machines going off, our family sobbing, and the doctors calmly yet authoritatively telling the nurses what to do with her body. Can I ask you all some questions? How many of you love the way you look? How many of you wish you could be in a little bit better shape? How many of you have ever written a book? How many of you have always wanted to share your story? How many of you have started a company? And how many of you know what those dark days are like and the moments you're clinging to that vision? How many of you love your family? But how many of you have told them why lately? How many of you are here with your significant other and have made the time to tell them why you picked them out of everybody else you could have been with? We're gonna parking lot all of that. You see, I was born with a life-threatening genetic condition known as cystic fibrosis. It has destroyed my pancreas and requires 38 pills a day just to digest my food, which now has caused a rare form of diabetes that I manage up to 5 times a day with insulin. In addition, last year I spent over 120 days in the hospital on IV antibiotics, accessed through this port, which I surgically had to have implanted into my chest for immediate vein access. I was hospitalized on October 31st, and I actually got out of the hospital 1 day before Alchemy. So a lot of you have probably seen me walking around carrying a pink bag, which is full of all of my IVs, which I've been infusing every 3 hours during this conference. All of this is an attempt to destroy the latest bacteria that wants to destroy all of my future opportunities. So we're gonna go back to January 2017. For a typical night in the hospital for a lifer like me. Which, by the way, lifer is hospital lingo for the types of patients that routinely check in and out of the hospital multiple times a year until they die. This is the third time. In 20 minutes, my IV pole beeps, alerting me that there is air in the lines of the tubes connected to my port. I glance at the clock. 2:32 a.m. You would think that hospitals are a place to rest, relax, recover, sleep in. No, they're not. Because during the day, there's a host of staff members walking into and out of your room giving you treatments. And at night, there's a host of different staff members walking back into and out of your room to test how those treatments are responding in your body. In the past 12 hours, I've consumed 38 pills, 12 nebulizer treatments, 5 different insulin shots, and a continuous drip of IV antibiotics, all in an attempt to help me breathe
so I don't get hospitalized again in 2 more months. And I, I know, I just have to hit that little button, page the nurse, and she'll come back in and she'll just fix my IV pole for me. But the thing is, it's 2:32 a.m. and we would probably spend the next 3 hours chatting about everything that's happened in the 2 months since I've seen her last. So I flip back my covers, walk over to my own IV pole, silence the mind-numbingly loud machine, and I gently flick the air bubbles back up the pole to the tube where they belong. I glance around, and I really relish in my thankfulness to have such vitality after being told for 29 years that next year might not happen. I have my blanket on the bed, my lucky teddy bear to keep me company. I have my work laptop charging in the corner next to a stack of my newly published books that the doctors asked me to autograph. And on the shelf are 2 dozen roses that the love of my life dropped off yesterday, to serve as a reminder that all I really need to focus on while I'm here is outliving them. And I've learned it doesn't matter if you're running a team, a company, or an IV drip bag. When you love your life and the people and things you choose to fill it with, you will quit capitalizing on only the good stuff, because the bad stuff is still a reminder that there is air in your lungs. For the most part, silent. And I've really come to love the silence of nights in the hospitals, except for those random code blues, which in a twisted way also makes me relish in my thankfulness that my cheeks still have that rosy pink color to them. I decide to unhook myself from the pole and go for a walk. Because one thing I love about living in the hospital more than my own homes is that eerie peacefulness that 3 a.m. can bring. Although it's unusually warm, I decide I still want to put on a sweater. Because one thing I have learned is it's important to always focus on the vision you have of yourself. And when the situation's very bleak, I choose to look like a visitor so I know I'm going home instead of looking like a patient. And as I walk out of my room, I open the doorway, and I check to make sure the nurses aren't at their stations. They hate it when I wander off. And peek, the corridor's fine, and I sneak off into the corridor that the security guard showed me a few months ago. And as I do, I walk past room 211. A friend of mine staying there, such a cute girl. She has wispy blonde hair, and she coughs every time she laughs, which is hilarious because then it makes me laugh, and then I start coughing, and the two of us just, we sound disgusting, but it's hilarious and funny, and it's everything perfect about being in that moment. And last night, so the thing about cystic fibrosis, for those of you who may not know, is we're not allowed to really come into contact with each other because she could have a bacteria that could kill me and vice versa. So I always stand just kind of in her doorway, and we talk, and she's way too sick to get up. She's a lot more critical than me. Her family asked that I keep her anonymous. And she's got her oxygen mask, and we start talking about Nelson Mandela, right? Like, is what we go through at all relatable to him? Like, did he look forward to the pre-planned bad food because it was just a time for human interaction and food? Did he focus on everything he could do inside his 4x4 instead of the lives of those he loved that pressed on without his existence? Did he choose to think about everything he could control and everything he could do and every memory he could have, rather than wonder about the memories that he would never have? As I reflect on our conversation, I decide to set my phone alarm to go off at 3:30 a.m. so I'm back by my next round of IVs. And as I do, I realize I missed a text from my boyfriend. Hey, baby, I miss you. It's hard to sleep without you here. I know. He wonders if this is the hospitalization where I leave through the morgue instead of the entrance. I was diagnosed with a pretty nasty infection that there's not a lot of treatments for. And he himself admits it's really tough on him. But the thing is I know what to share with him, and I know what not to share with him. Because reassuring a sobbing loved one that they won't have to bury me soon is a speech that I have practiced over and over while walking hospital hallways my entire life. And we've all seen that quote that entrepreneurship is believing in a vision that nobody can see but you. I know my body's P&L statement is pretty weak. I know what's forecasted for my longevity is definitely not impressive. But I also know the vision and the dedication and the power I have to take myself from a wheelchair with an oxygen mask to being able to run again is the same vision I have to take my company from something that's kind of small to on the Inc. 500. And I know how to reassure this to him as well. Same way I reassure my employees during a hospitalization that they're not going to wake up one day wondering if they have a job, but how many jobs they'll have to do. You know, I've spent so many nights of my life reassuring dying friends to just keep fighting, that this isn't their time, that they can do it. But we all knew it was a promise that would just not uphold. Because we all knew they'd take their last breath soon. As a kid, I was very, very involved in socializing with other people with cystic fibrosis until one by one, they died off. And I've lost more friends to this disease than I care to count. I was about 10, 12 years old, and I was in a hospital, and another tune-up, and I met Jake. Jake was about 6 or 7 years old. And at the time at the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics, it was common practice for us all to go downstairs to the gym for our daily workouts. And Jake was always on the treadmill facing me. So, Jake, me. And we'd have these competitions, like, let's see who can run as fast as we can until we cough, and that's how we'll know who wins. And it was just kind of a way that we enjoyed having our 2 p.m. daily workouts. We could cough up the mucus that was going to kill us. And one day, Jake showed up wearing the oxygen mask. And in between his own choking on mucus, he said to me, "One day, I'm going to run like you can." Jake was put on a ventilator that evening and died that weekend. And it made me think, why do we wait, cherish those whom we love till after they die? It seems like every seminar I go to, there's always some guru who will tell us, we should write our eulogy. We should write our epitaph. And for about 10 minutes, I feel inspired, and I think, yeah, that's a really good idea. But then I go home, and I never do it. But that's what walking the halls of a hospital every couple months at 3 a.m. can do for you. It'll give you the chance to practice what you would really say to your loved ones if you knew you wouldn't wake up tomorrow. Mom, remember that time, junior year, I couldn't go to prom because I was hospitalized. All of my girlfriends were getting to pick out their prom dress, and you know what I had to pick out? What kind of anti-nausea meds I wanted, and if I wanted them for breakfast or lunch. It wasn't fair. I was so mad. I didn't get a prom. And do you remember what you did to me? You told me to cry and have the biggest pity party I ever wanted, but I had a half hour. Do you remember what you did? You put me in my wheelchair and you rolled me up to the 7th floor burn unit. You made me smell decaying flesh. I talked with a woman that day who was chained to her bed, raped, and her ex lit the house on fire, leaving her for dead. And in that moment, you made me grateful for everything I'd ever had and everything I would ever have. You created my inspiration. No matter what happened, you were always so positive. And as an adult, the greatest compliment I have so far received in my life is to hear I grew up to be exactly like you. I love you, Mom. You may have loved me as long as I've lived, but Mom, I've loved you my entire life. Daddy. Remember that time I was 17, I wanted to go downtown dancing with my girlfriends to the candy shop Shake Off? You wouldn't let me go. So I slammed the door on you and I screamed, I hate you. Never told you this, but I am thankful that you were tough on me. And I'm thankful that you've always wanted more from me than what I wanted from myself. And I've only recently learned that a father's love is about protecting his little girl. Even when it means saying no to things she thinks she wants. And as a kid, you never really gave me anything. If I didn't achieve a goal, you'd remind me that prior proper planning prevents piss poor performance. And if I was complaining about CF, you'd tell me, so what? We all have issues. You know, I know there must have been times when you would have really loved to cave in and let me have my excuses. But instead, Dad, you let me have my life. I love you. Little brother. We were like 10, and we thought it'd be so much fun to steal all of Mom's pots and pans from the kitchen, move them to the garage, and start a band. We were going to make it. And we named the band Torpedoes. And after our hit song came out about Doritos, we both knew our singing career was pretty much over as soon as it began. And I remember waking up from a coma a few months after this. And the nurses were all like, what's your name? What year is it? How old are you? And I didn't care. Because the only thing I cared about was the fact that I woke up and you weren't there. How could you not be there? We were best friends. I noticed a pink teddy bear in the corner, and I remember Mom bringing it to me, and I just cuddled with it against all the wires. And I just sobbed, I cried. And I asked where you were, and that was when Mom told me that for the first time in 30 nights, you had gone home. And you spent your entire allowance on this bear. I know we've had our sibling rivalries, and I never want them to get in the way of the love we share. The world would be a much better place if there were more little brothers like you in it. The love of my life. We've been dating, like, I don't know, 2.5 years at this point. And in that amount of time, you've shown me an entirely new world. We've seen the sequoias, we've gone to Vegas, we've taken epic road trips. But even in those everyday moments where you come home from work and you just want to watch Breaking Bad, it still feels like a vacation. And it still feels like I'm getting to explore something new. There's something about you that I just don't get. Why do you like to see the Vikings lose every weekend? It doesn't make sense. Like, you go from the nicest guy to making me wear a non-flattering jersey in a hot sports bar, and you just scream at a TV knowing they're going to have a predictable mistake for roughly 3 to 5 hours. But then on our last trip, it was super sunny out, and you're walking into half a dozen different gift shops. And I finally am like, what are you looking for at this point? Very, very annoyed. It makes no sense. Why are you doing this to me? And you admit you forgot your sunglasses. So I pull them out of my purse, and I wave them in front of you. I'm like, I packed them from home because I knew you'd forget. Don't you remember what you called me? Clutch or something. No idea what you're even talking about. So I Google it. Clutch performance in sports is the phenomenon of an athlete under pressure, often in the last moments, to summon up the strength, courage, and whatever else necessary to change the outcome of the game. And when I found that definition, I found the definition of why you love the Vikings. You're waiting for that performance. And when I realized that, I realized why I love you. Because from the trips to the Sequoias in Dallas and all over the world, to the trips back and forth after running a company all day to my hospital bed, you're my clutch. I love you. Statistically, more people die in the hospital than in their own homes. Statistically, these deaths occur between 11 p.m. and 3 a.m. Statistically, my family will be at my funeral within the next 2 years. But there's a power in being able to walk the halls of the hospital at the right place and time that pretty much guarantees my exit to the morgue. And there's a power right now in every breath because I choose to be too busy living to die. And it doesn't matter if you're walking the halls of a hospital at 3 a.m. or walking into a boardroom to defy the odds, you choose your power. And it doesn't matter if you're wondering if you can survive the night or the next market crash. There is a way to turn every setback into a comeback, every trial into a triumph. Because it's only our interpretation of what is going on that is actually going on. And in the midst of my thoughts, doctors and nurses rush past me in a frenzied run. The light in the hallways auto-adjusts to accommodate, and speakers boom through the silence. Code blue, code blue. Attention staff on 2 West, there is a code blue in room 211. I knew she was a lot more critical than me. I just didn't know my last conversation with her would be my last conversation with her. She's so happy. She was sitting up in the bed, the oxygen mask aiding her as she spoke, and she kept talking about how much she loved her friends, how much she loved her family, and all the signs were there that she was ready, but I was too focused on myself to listen to what she had to say. And she was talking about so many inspirational things, and I was caught up in my own moment, not focused on the fact that she knew she would be taking her last breath soon. And in the weeks leading up to it, she showed me all the artwork she had actually been painting to give out as gifts to all the other patients, because that was the only thing she could contribute to the world. I take that as a sign to head back to my own room before the alarm goes off. And as I hook myself back up to my own IV pole, I can hear the machines going off, her family sobbing, and the doctors calmly yet authoritatively giving the nurses orders on what to do with her body. I started thinking about why. Why are we here? Why did Jake die before he could ever run? And I'm almost 30 and able to run a company. Why was she so happy? And as I drifted off to sleep, an idea hit me that night, and I've been toying with it ever since. Maybe the reason we keep searching for our why is because we forget that happiness is now. Maybe searching for our why every day robs us of the realization that we have the day. Let's go back to that parking lot. How many of you love the way you look? How many of you wish you could be in better shape? The thing is I cough so badly every time I work out that people come up to me in the gym and say I probably shouldn't be out in public. I have this great talent of making the machines next to me suddenly not crowded. And every workout I force myself to attend, I remember the look on Jake's face, how he looked me in the eyes and said, "I want to run like you can." I may cough every time I run, but I'm alive to enjoy running and coughing while I do it. Let's appreciate our bodies for what they're able to do. How many of you have ever wanted to write a book? Share your story. See, I wrote mine from that laptop on the shelf. I was in the hospital, and all I had was a moment. So I opened it up, and I got on LinkedIn. I started emailing famous entrepreneurs. hoping they could dig me out of where I was. I wanted to learn what their tough days were like, what the darkest days were like, the stuff that nobody talks about. And when I discovered that, I discovered that cystic fibrosis killing me and the way your companies can threaten your futures is equally as painful. And I wanted to get that story out there. Why not seize your moments? Why not stop putting off everything you've wanted to do and just go for it? How many of you have a company with over $1 million in revenue? Yeah. How many of you remember what those dark days were like? Here's why I really started my company. Do you know that only 4% of companies can make it to $1 million in revenue? I know what it's like to have a 4% chance of making it. I know what it's like for everybody to tell you, you don't have a chance, you don't have a choice, this just isn't gonna go the way you want it to. And I know what it's like that when nobody's encouraging you, you can encourage yourself. Because at the moments when you need it most, it's yourself that needs to be able to pull through. And so I thought, why not? Why not defy the odds? Why not take my moment? I'm just as capable as anybody else. Why not? How many of you love your family? How many of you have taken the time to tell them why? If you have somebody in your family that you're not that close to right now, but at one point you were, make the call. Not a text, not an email, not a fax, none of that. Make the call. Because too many people leave this planet way too early without getting a chance to express the love in their hearts while they can. Why not share the authenticity you have and your message of love? Because it is so easy for all of us to fault the people in our lives for everything they did wrong. But if we're gonna take the time to fault them for everything they did wrong, we should also fault them for everything they did right. Why not? How many of you are in the room with your significant other? Oh, there's quite a bit of you. All right, you too. Can you do me a favor and stand up? Can you just say pretty loudly what your names are? Karen and?
Michelle.
Okay. Humor me on this one. I'd like for you to look at each other. You don't have to say it loud enough for us all to hear, but just for your faces. And Karen, I'd like you to do the favor first, and I'd like you to tell Michelle why you love him. Michelle, will you please return that favor to her? I was going to ask you to kiss her like you did on your wedding day, but there you go. Did you guys all feel that? Even if you couldn't hear it, you could feel it. Maybe the reason we're searching for happiness is because we forget that happiness is now. We can create it at any moment. I'm going to leave you with one thing cystic fibrosis has taught me. So much better to live a short life full of things we love than a long life spent in a miserable way. Because ultimately, life isn't even measured by the number of breaths we take, but by the number of moments that take our breath away. Thank you.
Kaylin Elsberry, ladies and gentlemen. Kaylin Elsberry. Hey, you know what? Can we just continue to encourage her a little bit more? She's backstage. Kaylin, we just want to continue to... Just as a village and as a tribe and as business owners, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and everything. Wow, that was really moving. Was that the first EO quasi-proposal ever, too, by the way? I don't know. Anyway.